From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Several African-American staffers who worked in the inner-city campaign offices for Pritzker claimed that they were mistreated and that they were told Pritzker would not visit their office until, quote, the shooting stops.
Pritzker's team forwarded to us this calendar showing Pritzker visited the South Side and Far South Side six times, the last visit in July.
Pritzker's running mate, Juliana Stratton, suggested the lawsuit seeking millions in damages was an 11th-hour shakedown. But a former Pritzker campaign staffer, who's not a plaintiff in the lawsuit, corroborated the claims.
There were racial slurs, there were sexist jokes that were made, and it was rampant, and unfortunately it didn't go, it went unchecked.
She left after the Pritzker-Blagojevich wiretaps came out, in which Pritzker was making those racially insensitive remarks.
I'm not sure that any of us should be surprised that his campaign may have engaged in discriminatory practices.
The claims that have been made are untrue. And Juliana and I are proud that we've put together a campaign, the centerpiece of which is inclusion and diversity. And we're going to have the most diverse administration in the history of the state of Illinois.
An October surprise in the race for Illinois governor. And it was a surprise this week. A lawsuit targeting J.B. Pritzker's campaign. We'll talk about that and more just a couple of weeks before Election Day. In Springfield, I'm Sean Crawford. The panel includes Charlie Wheeler, and Charlie is director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. In our Statehouse Bureau, we have the Illinois Public Radio Statehouse editor Brian Mackey. And joining us by phone from Chicago today, Amanda Vinicky with Chicago Tonight. Amanda, it's always good to have you back on.
I always love being back on.
Well, I'll start with both Brian, Amanda, whichever one of you want to take this first. But can you lay out the basics of what this lawsuit is alleging?
Yeah, I mean, I can start with that. There are 10 current and former staffers. They claim that Pritzker's campaign operation subjected them to harassment and retaliation. They worked as field organizers. Most of them are African-American. One is Latina. And they say they were forced to work in dangerous locations and had to endure, quote, crass and racially discriminatory language.
And Amanda, do we know anything about these individuals?
We don't know a ton, although some of their names are public. There's, for example, one member of the Champaign County Board, another individual who, from what I gather, may have been sort of the ringleader, is contemplating a run for alderman in Chicago and was active in protests at Mizzou, for example. But one of the campaign staffers, as this is something interesting, only one of them had really been with the campaign for an extended amount of time since spring of 2017. Others were just hired over the summer. One, the individual who was raised the ruckus about where she was staying in Peoria, was only with the campaign for 10 days just last month. They were all field organizers with really a varied experience. Field organizers, by the way, are just basically those who, you know, would be knocking on doors and organizing community events, trying to raise the profile, in this case of J.B. Pritzker, in local areas.
Brian, there seemed to be some interesting developments that came out once this was first announced, in which the Pritzker campaign made the comment that there had been, you know, I don't know if I want to call it a shakedown attempt or something beforehand.
Well,
you don't
have to call it that because Juliana Stratton, who is Pritzker's running mate, she did. So we can say that Juliana Stratton, who herself, it's worth noting, is African-American, called these charges baseless and offensive and used the word shakedown because she says that the campaign, and they released an excerpt of a letter they say they received about a week, I believe, before the lawsuit was filed, and it said, you know, here's our list of demands. Among them were we want personal positive letters of recommendation for all the people from Pritzker, and we want $7.5 million for damages. And they said that the campaign had basically a weekend to respond. And she says that that is, you know, in her view, shows that this is about the money, right? Not necessarily about true claims of discrimination. The campaign points out they have 200 people working across the state. The majority of the senior leadership team is Black, and the campaign says that 45% of the campaign's workers, which would be, what, about 90 people, are people of color.
And, Charlene,
and I will add, Sean, if we just briefly here, because I was able to speak with one of the attorneys representing these plaintiffs. His name is Shay Allen, and asked him some of those questions. You know, was this extortion? And he said, no, this is civil rights, and it is very normal in civil suits such as this one to try to work out a settlement deal, and that's what the letter was offering. And when there are damages suffered for what these plaintiffs were arguing was lack of advancement opportunities and even a lack of opportunity to work directly with J.B. Pritzker himself, they said that you get paid for that, and it's also, of course, you know, damages in terms of punishment and learning a lesson to try to avoid this sort of activity from happening in the future. He said, however, that the Pritzker campaign did not adequately respond to that settlement offer, and hence the suit itself was filed.
Charlie, let me get your thoughts on this. And to be honest, I don't know what to think of this. I mean, it, you know,
you're not alone.
The reporter in me thinks that, you know, well, maybe there's something, you know, nefarious going on here. And then there's also we're in a different environment these days where a lot of people are not going to put up with certain behavior, maybe the way they once did. Charlie, your thoughts on what you're hearing on this?
Well, the only, what would you say, like personal insight I can offer is that one of the complaints came from a woman who said she had to sleep in a car and she was, the Pritzker campaign was going to put her up in unsafe conditions in Peoria. And Chris Kjærgaard, who's now back at the Journal Star, thankfully, actually contacted the campaign and got a whole list of hotel bills and reservations for this woman by the Pritzker campaign. And a couple of places she said she didn't want to stay. I've actually stayed there. You know, Super 8s are not like the Hyatt Regency or something. But if you're looking for a place just to lay down, sleep, get up, take a shower, and go back to work, it's perfectly fine. So I don't know what to make of this. I mean, this is something I've never heard of before, never seen before. And I think some of the complaints, the racism aside, if you're a low-level staffer and you're unhappy because you don't get to meet directly with the candidate and share your thoughts, that's to be expected. I covered a lot of campaigns, statewide campaigns for the Sun-Times. Back in the days, the Chicago newspapers used to have a commitment. The last 2 weeks before an election, they would send reporters to follow candidates for governor and for U.S. senator around the state. So you'd be with them every waking moment for 2 weeks. And the conditions were not that great. You know, you weren't being put up in fancy hotels. You had to eat on the fly. You eat when you could. This kind of the saying was, grab a bite whenever you can because you don't know when the next opportunity is going to come. And so on the one hand, I thought some of these complaints sound kind of naive, that they're the things that most low-level campaign staffers would be used to. Now, the racism, the discrimination, that's something else again.
And the truth is we're probably not going to know the truth about what happened here, certainly by Election Day, because it's just too close for this all to weigh itself out. But Brian, Governor Bruce Rauner did weigh in on this. And what were his thoughts?
Yeah, well, he basically linked this back to those FBI wiretaps that the Chicago Tribune obtained and wrote about. I can't remember if it was earlier this year or late last year, but basically on those tapes, Pritzker was heard discussing who Blagojevich was going to appoint with Blagojevich, who then Governor Blagojevich was going to appoint to Barack Obama's Senate seat. Obama had been elected president. Blagojevich got to fill that vacancy. And some of the things he said, he apologized for. He called the state Senate president at the time, who was African-American, quote, crass. He said that Jesse White, the Secretary of State, would be the least offensive African-American you could put into that position. And in fact, some of that language was taken by the attorneys who drafted the complaint and used you know, sort of in an attempt to be clever to sort of work that language into this complaint. The governor says this shows a pattern and that people shouldn't be surprised about this. However, his campaign, you know, when asked about, you know, if we could talk, I asked if I could talk to some people of color who work for his campaign about their experience. The campaign took a day to get back to me and didn't really get back with specific numbers or offer to have me talk to anyone.
Well, and I guess, Brian, the big question on a lot of people's minds here probably is, hey, you know, this is close to the campaign. This comes out. It's attacking a guy who's the front runner, you know, at least in the polling that we've seen. You know, did Republicans have something to do with this? There's no indication, at least at this point, one way or the other, that the other side is doing some dirty trick here, right?
Well, and I think a lot of us, when we first heard about this, remembered what happened to Dan Rutherford 4 years ago in the primary. He was doing very well in the Republican primary when Bruce Rauner was just a businessman who was trying to get into politics. There were four people in that race. And suddenly there was this lawsuit that accused Rutherford of harassment in his he was the state treasurer at the time. And ultimately, nothing really came of that. And there was an inspector's report that largely dismissed that. And so people wondered, and there were questions about the lawyer who was representing the person filing that complaint had done some work with Rauner in the past. So there were a lot of questions at that time about, you know, was this a politically motivated hit job? And Rutherford tanked in the polls, and he never really recovered after that. And so I think you know, those of us who are inclined to think about these things and see shadows in Illinois government, and, you know, it is a place where there are plots and things like that. You know, we're just scratching our heads wondering about that, but there doesn't seem to, certainly Rauner's campaign has completely disavowed it. There doesn't seem to be any connection. And if you talk to some people, sort of, they will whisper, you know, the governor lost a lot of the skilled political operatives who would be able to do this kind of move. And his current campaign really just doesn't have that capacity to do something this, you know, secretive and damaging at this point in the campaign. The question I have, you were getting to this, I think, is, you know, what effect does this have? We're less than 3 weeks from the election now. Pritzker has had anywhere from a 13 to a 22-point lead in the polls. Would this be enough to damage him? Would African-Americans who maybe were inclined to vote for him suddenly decide to vote for Governor Rauner? That seems like a stretch. Maybe it does depress turnout, though. We'll find out in a few weeks.
And Amanda, we heard from Bruce Rauner at the start of the show. We also heard a little bit from J.B. Pritzker. Has Pritzker done enough to refute these claims, you know, at least from what you're hearing from him? Has he done enough maybe to satisfy those voters who might want to vote for him but are concerned about this?
You know, he's in a difficult spot here. I did want to add, actually, to what Brian had said in terms of the Rauner campaign disavowing any sort of coordination. The plaintiff's attorney likewise denied that there was any sort of political hit job or set up in partnership at all with the Rauner campaign. Certainly journalists are looking into that and trying to see if, in fact, there are any ties, though, as Brian noted, none have come out. In terms of Pritzker himself did have a media availability on Thursday to really try to address some of these issues. He was absent. However, most of the day that this came out, all we had was a one-sentence statement from his campaign and a little bulkier one from Juliana Stratton, his running mate. In a way, they're in a difficult position because this is, of course, a lawsuit. And so the campaign is making a point to be very diligent about what it does and does not say, given that there's pending legal action. But, I mean, again, Pritzker is so far in front. Perhaps the strategy is to try to not say too much about it, hope that folks will move on because he is so far ahead. And, of course, those early voting returns are huge. I know I myself at our home received one of these letters from the Pritzker campaign to mail in my vote and get that in early. Perhaps that it could be something that is already helping Pritzker. But he has denied this completely. I think that we need to keep in mind the timing may well be suspicious, and yet, and it is certainly strange because something that I really keep in mind is many of these staffers, there were a couple that left the Pritzker campaign, many are still working for him. I mean, they have been active on social media, and the campaign has said, yeah, they're still on staff. So they're working to get this guy elected, even as they are suing him, or his campaign, that is, not him personally, for racial discrimination. So I guess Pritzker is in sort of a tight spot there, and he is trying to walk the tightrope. But that damage from those FBI wiretaps may have already cost him with certain African-American voters. Others, I think, probably feel like they have nowhere else to go because there is a lot of disappointment in those sectors with Governor Rauner.
And let me go back to the polling that we've seen, which in some most cases, really, over the last couple of months, has seen double-digit leads for J.B. Pritzker, even approaching 20% or more in some cases. Charlie, this is a situation where if this was a tight race, you might say, hey, this could really swing things. It doesn't appear, at least right now, to be a tight race. And also, Bruce Rauner has his own problems. So do you think this really moves the needle at all regarding the election?
I don't think it's going to change the results. If you're a voter who is going to vote for J.B. Pritzker because you absolutely don't like Bruce Rauner, you're not going to suddenly say, okay, these allegations have been made not against J.B. himself, but some of his campaign leadership, that they behaved in this horrible manner towards minority workers. That doesn't mean I'm going to turn around and vote for Bruce Rauner. I may decide I'm just going to take a pass on that and vote for other Democrats on down the line, or I may just decide to stay home. But I don't think it moves anybody to vote towards Bruce Rauner, who would have been wanting to vote for J.B. Pritzker.
Do you think Pritzker has done enough, as I mentioned before, to refute these claims? Has he been forceful enough on that?
I guess he has. I don't really have a good answer for that because I'm not sure what more he could have done. Should he have gone out and said, I'm going to fire all these field managers? Should he have said, yes, we'll give you the $7.5 million? Mm-hmm. I mean, if you want to look at it cynically, it's not necessarily that Bruce Rauner somehow has operatives who are skilled enough to put this together at this point. It's rather, is there some opportunistic lawyer out there who sees a way? Here's this guy who's got more money than Fort Knox. He's spending it hand over fist. Why not try and get a piece of it for ourselves? You know, what would the lawyer's cut of this $7.5 million be? And I'm not saying this is true, but I'm saying these are the kind of questions that get asked.
And the other side of the finances is that critics would say Pritzker has made such a big deal about opening field operations all across the state and having this massive staff, including some who individuals who come from out of state may not be familiar with the neighborhoods that they're in. I mean, that's another part of this, as Brian noted when we began the program, that one of these field offices was in, or several in, quote, bad parts of town. The south side of Chicago office in particular was cited in the suit, where a gunfight occurred outside and there were robberies nearby. The Pritzker campaign has provided proof that, in fact, J.B. was there, and yet it has been a while. These individuals, this is an area where there's a largely minority population who lives there, and so do you want to have, when you're knocking on doors, field staffers that might be able to, you know, really communicate with the folks nearby, and then they say, hey, wait, that's racism. You're putting me in the bad part of town versus the white staffers, so that maybe all of the money that Pritzker has put into the campaign has just become so unwieldy and gotten out of control and out-of-touch senior staff that didn't deal with this. That's at least the other side of it that has been expressed by, including some, like I said, there's certainly a division within those who work for Pritzker, particularly when you look at statements made to the media and on social media, those who say this is ridiculous and are sticking up for him and believe that he has made a commitment to diversity that is exemplified within the hiring of his campaign, and others that say, yeah, I was there, and I do believe that racial discrimination was prevalent and ignored.
Yeah, and I would also add the fact that some of the campaign people are still working for him, the folks who filed the suit, I don't think that undercuts their credibility. And the reason I say that is they may have decided, yeah, J.B. Pritzker, the man, would be a much better governor than our current incumbent, Bruce Rauner. So I'm going to work for him. But I want to call to his attention and the attention of the broader public, hey, there's these issues with this campaign. we think they should be addressed, and we want him and the rest of you to know about it. That doesn't mean we're going to say, okay, we're not going to work for him, we're not going to vote for him, because we still think that he's the best choice for Illinois. So I don't see necessarily any, you know, contradiction in that.
I think that's right, Charlie. And anyone who's ever had a job where they get a paycheck signed by somebody else knows that, you know, the top person at your organization probably doesn't know what the manager and assistant manager and assistant assistant managers are doing. And so it seems plausible that, you know, you would have a hard-charging campaign person who maybe is not well-liked by the staff. Is that racial discrimination? That's something that is going to have to be litigated here. I did want to pick up on a point that some others had made. You know, there is a division in the staff, but there are also some staff members who have really pushed back against specifics in this lawsuit. Mm-hmm. One person was cited as having African-American had dreadlocks, and he was told to cut his dreadlocks to look more, you know, acceptable or something like that. That's what the lawsuit alleges. This individual went on Facebook and said, I cut my dreads because that's what I wanted to do. Nobody told me to do it, and it's offensive, you know, to be brought into this. And I think you see a division here between people who are really loyal to the mission, people who have been with Pritzker for a long time and you know, really have invested themselves. You work on a campaign. It's like, you know, people liken it to an experience in being like, I don't know, the military or some, you know, something where you are working constantly. You're away from home. You may live somewhere else in the country. It's a very intense thing, and you get very loyal to the person you're working for typically. And then as you filter down and build up, as Amanda said, you need to expand across the state. Maybe the vetting is not as tight. You have more people who are just kind of looking for a job. And that's where you get people who are maybe not as loyal to the mission. And I think that that's why for those of us who follow politics, it's so exceptional to think that even if you had these complaints, why would you make them, you know, 3 weeks before the election instead of a week after the election? If your main concern was getting your candidate elected. I mean, Obama had offices across the country. Surely there were some bad managers at some level in that organization. And yet, you know, nobody felt compelled to file a lawsuit or something like that. I mean, he inspires a level of loyalty in people, as most candidates or as most politicians do in their staff. That's why this is just such a head scratcher for those of us who are used to covering these things.
Well, and then the letter saying we're going to file the suit unless you pay us $7.5 million, that kind of casts a shadow on it too.
Yeah, that wasn't. Let me in the few minutes we have left here turn to Amanda, because Amanda, WTTW Public TV, producing a couple of documentaries on the two front-running candidates for governor, Bruce Rauner and J.B. Pritzker. Of course, you worked on one of those more than the other, but from what you got to see of these, did you learn anything about these guys that we did not already know?
The objective of these documentaries was to look less at their political views and positions and more at who J.B. Pritzker and Bruce Rauner are as individuals, what molded them and therefore may inform their choices and leadership styles. J.B. Pritzker's documentary was done by my colleague Paris Schutz and really focused in on his family story. And so in how that Pritzker himself often talks about working with his mother and how that developed his views on politics and his, you know, progressive positions, and why he has, since a very young age, really been devoted to and aspiring to a career in politics. I worked mostly on the Rauner documentary, and I tried to call a lot of folks from his business days and associates, many of whom were unwilling to talk for the documentary, but I was able to speak with the best man in his wedding, one of his daughters, Meg, also with the First Lady, Diana Rauner, and there was some new insight. For example, Diana Rauner spoke about her husband having actually a difficult youth in terms of his mother was diagnosed with bipolar disorder, and how she said that really made him into somebody who was, you know, responsible and protective and also close to the grandfather that we so often hear Rauner speak of. And then also was able to interview Rich Goldberg, who is fired in, quote, the purge, but hadn't really spoken a lot about what went on there. And Goldberg was still not wanting to really get into his personal feelings in terms of how that all shook out, merely saying he was happy to serve for as long as he did. But speaking about everything from the difficulties of having a governor who likes to ride a motorcycle because you need a split-second decision and you can't you just hand him the cell phone over, but also to how that he was, you know, very hardworking and the stubbornness and his real true refusal during a lot of the negotiations on the budget and so forth to come to any deal that defied what Rauner saw as his true principles and why voters had elected him.
And of course, Rauner this week, about 30 seconds or so here, but I just wanted to mention he again was talking, I believe this was both on radio and I think the Tribune picked up on this as well, where he said his biggest mistake he felt as governor was his inability maybe to communicate clearly. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, messaging is the
messaging.
Term he used.
Messaging.
And in fact, Rich Goldberg, that same former chief of staff that Amanda was just talking about, retweeted the or responded to the Tribune's story with that with a simple LOL, which just the governor has consistently said that he feels if he could just communicate better. He says to us, if you and the media will just help me get the word out there, we can, you know, convince the people of Illinois. And I think the best, reaction to that about why that may not be his biggest problem came from a state senator, Toy Hutchinson, a few years ago, who at the end of a session said, I'm not going to negotiate you guys out of being Republicans any more than you can negotiate me out of being Democrats. He was just trying to push a very conservative agenda through what is still a largely Democratic state and very certainly a Democratic legislature. And that seems to be the consensus as to why he failed, not that he wasn't able to
get his
word out
across.
Better. Yeah, exactly.
Well, let's go to our notes from the field. Charlie?
Well, the State Board of Elections announced earlier this week that they are confident that all the votes cast in the November 6th election will be securely counted, and that is in the wake of Justice Department investigation into the Russian meddling. Part of it was that some 70,000-plus voter records were accessed at the State Board. But they point out that they've taken steps. They've beefed up the cybersecurity. They have cybersecurity experts in the National Guard on hand to be anywhere in the state if some issue arises. And they also note, and I think this is pretty important, that we have backups in terms of paper records. Every vote that gets cast, it's also a paper trail left. And we don't have a central voting system in the sense that people vote in counties and boards of election commissioners. That stuff is all disconnected so that there's no way that someone could come in, for example, and hack every voting machine at the polls to register votes for somebody else.
And Brian, about 20 seconds.
Yeah, the Illinois Supreme Court has upheld a 76-year prison sentence for somebody who was 18 years old when they committed the crime. It was murder, but the U.S. and Illinois Supreme Courts have been undoing lifetime sentences for people who are under 18. Illinois justices declined to extend that protection to 18-year-olds. Advocates say that it's not as if people magically become different when they turn 18. They say that cognitive research is showing us that decision-making is still questionable well into the 20s, and they're pushing to continue to try and get that age raised up for sentencing people to life in prison.
That'll do it for this week. The members of the broadcast included Charlie Wheeler, Brian Mackey, and Amanda Vinicky. You can get a podcast of our show at nprillinois.org. Production assistance for the program was provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.